Welcome, gaming enthusiasts one and all, to episode 69 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where the swag flows freely and all demos have minimal queue times. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And Rick is out rocking the world again, leaving Brian and I to hold down the fort, which I think we'll be able to do with a very interesting post-PAX show.
Poor Dragon Con.
Indeed. It has the misfortune of overlapping at a time when at least I am on the opposite coast, really the opposite corner of the country. We'll have to like multi-thread next year, maybe cover both.
I'm working on Dragon Con for next year.
I'd like to get a little Ganza representation into that con as well, so we should see about doing that. Before we dig into con discussions, let's do our usual Geekly Weekly Roundup, just you and I, Brian. What have you been up to since last we spoke?
I had an interesting Star Wars night. As everyone knows, we're playing Star Wars Edge of the Empire, and things have been going pretty well. We've got all of our characters kind of going, and the story's starting to roll along. Well, 2 weeks ago, Angelo, our GM, just kind of mentioned that we were blowing through things pretty easily. Like, the combat was maybe one or two people would get shot up a little bit, but for the most part, we were just killing anything we came across. And I kind of agreed with that. I wasn't really sure if it was because we were new. A couple of our guys are pretty heavy hitters. I thought maybe that things would even out as skill sets emerged and people were a little bit less shooty. But this week, we played an introduction adventure, like a level one, roll your characters and play this adventure. And we got the living snot kicked out of us the first encounter.
Like, wow.
We're very likely going to wipe.
Wow.
I think that's interesting for me.
And these enemies that you encountered were just part of this intro level sanctioned
Six
module?
Six Gamorrean Guard.
Wow. Can't even fight these space orcs, huh?
No, dude. They are one swipe of their POS vibro axe almost beheaded the Jawa. Two more people that, like, if they get hit again, they're done for. We have not killed a single space orc.
Yikes.
It's frightening. We pause in the middle of that. I think we're going to do a little divine intervention this week. So I'm looking forward to that. We checked everything, too. It's really an introductory adventure, and somehow it's devastatingly hard.
Well, you're being introduced to the pain that could be inflicted by space orcs, also known as Gamorrean guards. So where you left things, your party was in some peril, it sounds like.
Yeah, a lot of peril. A lot of peril.
Well, apart from that harrowing experience, anything else?
I finished the book, well, the ebook that I was reading. I'm glad to say that got actually a lot more interesting. The writing was good throughout. Like I said, it wasn't the lyrical poetry that I have come to expect from some other writers. But it was good writing. And about three quarters of the way through, I think, the story just took a huge turn and got really, really good. I'm really happy to mention that. Definitely a book that if you're going to dedicate yourself to it, will pay off. Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson.
All right. I'm glad that worked out.
And lastly, I tried playing Black Sigil, the Nintendo DS game that I picked up a couple of weeks ago. I think I mentioned that.
Yes.
It's a classic 16-bit throwback. I can't play portables. I don't know. They don't hold my interest.
Just too much going on a tiny screen in your hand to keep you involved or not immersive?
It's just not immersive. It just doesn't feel like I'm playing. Like, I don't even know what to do with the stylus. I'm, like, tapping screens and, you know, like, feels like I'm drumming nervously instead of playing a game.
Too bad. Well, I'm glad you had a success on the reading front and a kind of a miss on the gaming front, sad to say.
I'm going to have to buy that super-duper Game Boy where I can play my 3DS titles on the TV, see if that helps.
Oh, is there, like, an adapter or something that lets you do that?
I don't know.
Well, I hope it exists. I remember there was something like that for the original Game Boy, or the Game Boy Advance, wasn't there, that let you play it on the Super NES? Hopefully such a thing exists for the 3DS. In fact, just as a quick aside, one of the things I was wishing as I was at all of the Nintendo displays was that I could get a hold of those display units they had where they were actually showing 3DS games on, like, a big screen.
Nice.
Yeah, that'd be kind of a cool thing. I think Nintendo should think about marketing something like that. So anything else?
Painting my miniatures. I tried a few new techniques that I picked up. it amazes me how science is just fucking magical.
Magical in the sense that...
I'm used to spray priming, and you have to be very careful how much paint you get on the model, because some of the details are so fine that you can obscure the detail and just like ruin the figure. And priming has always been a major source of stress for me. So I was looking up other ways to prime, and apparently there's this thing called gesso, which I guess like a lot of art majors use. And it's the latest, greatest thing for modelers. You can glob it on. You can use way too much. And when it dries, it shrinks. I think it is literally impossible to use too much. You cannot lose definition.
It just sort of shrinks its way into the crevices and whatnot on the models.
It conforms to the original plastic like perfectly. It's amazing. Cool.
All right. Well, that might even make me a successful painter. Very encouraging. All right. Does that conclude your update, sir?
That does.
Rick, how about you? Oh, we know what you did last week. We know what you're doing this week. You're rocking out. How about over to me then? Don't mind if I do. Obviously, my big news is that I attended PAX. But I should start by saying I don't want this to be lost in the shuffle. I was able to go and pick up my Ultimate Gamers Storage Bag. Is that the correct name, Brian?
I believe it is.
From Improbable Objects. It was a Kickstarter that you and I both backed, and I went and actually, since I'm in Seattle, went and met the creator himself, Dave Howell. Actually got to hang out with him and talk to him for a couple hours along with some other people that showed up, helped him label some boxes, did my part for the cause, and picked up my very high quality bag. I'm very impressed with it. And as well, picked up some of his penny gems, which are sort of game token decals that can be applied to pennies, as the name implies. As well, got some nice promotional penny gems from him, which we should set about handing out, I think, here on the podcast, maybe as prizes for participation or however we want to do that. So cool guy, and hopefully somebody we can line up as a future guest. So he's a very interesting fellow to talk to. Let's see, apart from that, more or less went about my week, and then a friend of mine named Nick came into town. Nick is a fellow podcaster. They do a podcast called 10 Cent FM. He came into town for PAX. I had no intention of going to PAX because, as you know, I was standing strong. I wasn't going to pay scalpers. I was really resentful that they got all the tickets, etc. But I was, you know, going to make sure Nick got settled into his hotel and show him how to get to the convention center and then just sort of, you know, bid him farewell. Well, my fate was more or less sealed as we started walking toward the convention center, and I saw all of these gamers like just swarming around. That didn't seal my fate. That sort of primed the pump. Then I started to see some scalpers on the street and just kind of asking about prices. I'm like, well, you know, these are within my price range. I don't want to pay scalpers. I don't want to. And next thing you know, I had tickets for all 4 days in hand.
Wow.
Yeah, well, actually, 3 days. Nick actually had arranged in advance to get me a Monday ticket from somebody online, which was a really cool thing to do. So thanks to him, I was guaranteed to attend on Monday, but I ended up getting tickets for all 3 days. And instead of parting with him at the gates of PAX, I walked right into the convention center and enjoyed my first ever PAX. It was awesome. So that brings us to the topic of PAX, which, for those who don't know, those of you who have been living under who knows what kind of geological structure, is a con devoted to tabletop and board gaming and video gaming. I have to say, it's the best con I've ever been to. I never want to miss another one if I can avoid it. Unlike a lot of cons where we're sort of like trying to figure out what we want to do in and among all the things that don't interest us, there was too much going on at PAX. I couldn't have seen it all if I wanted to. Nick is an avid video gamer. Since he was the reason I was going to PAX, I focused solely on video games, so favoring video games over all of the awesome tabletop stuff that I was also tempted by, and I didn't get to even half of what was on offer. So if you want a con that has just more than you could ever do, I can't say enough about PAX. So with that said, my focus being primarily video games, I played a heck of a lot of games, did a lot of game demoing, and even attended a few pretty cool panels. On Friday, we kind of got there, just walked the floor, checked everything out, was able to stop by the Sony Online Entertainment booth, SOE booth, and sit through a discussion on EverQuest Next, which got me pretty excited because I was, well, you and I, Brian, were early adopters on EverQuest. I think first week adopters. You might have been first day. So they got me really excited for EverQuest. They're doing some pretty innovative stuff there. All the things that were on my checklist for what an MMORPG should do. Enemies that adapt to you, a world that changes, a world that you can actually change, all there. And all new lore. So it doesn't have the baggage of the previous EverQuest games, though I think it's going to still borrow heavily from the previous lore. It's its own storyline. So that should be great. Looking most forward to that. And also on the Xbox One, played the new Forza game. And I've been a fan of that driving series. I know, I don't know how big of a driving game fan you are, but I had a hell of a fun time checking that out. The graphics were absolutely gorgeous.
And, I've never played Forza.
It's good. Have you played Gran Turismo for the PlayStation family of consoles?
Yeah.
So it's sort of Microsoft's answer to that, I guess. Fills that role on the Xbox platform. Fills it quite nicely, I might add. So.
And there was actually Xbox Ones there.
Well, I won't vouch for them being like Xbox Ones running this stuff. A lot of the displays had Xbox Ones sitting there, but I didn't know if I was really playing like computer hardware under the covers. I know for some of the games, I was in fact playing on a computer.
Okay. So, but it was architecture and operating system.
Yeah, it was a build intended for the Xbox One, whether it was running on the hardware. So. Yeah, and that was the case for a lot of these games. Yeah, well, who knows how when they put these out. I think a lot of this stuff was ported over from, like, E3, so, you know, also being shown at PAX. So, yeah, hopefully it's not as a bad sign as you're thinking it is, I'm hoping. Let's see, on Friday, we also attended, caught the tail end of a couple of panels, one of which concerned video game marketing, which Nick was keenly interested in because he has a mind to enter the industry in some capacity, perhaps, you know, related to marketing and that sort of thing. Another, which was more interesting to me, having to do with Dungeons & Dragons. And it was basically Dungeons & Dragons evolution from early days to, like, the new digital future. At least that's what the title of it was. I only caught the tail end. I walked in just as somebody asked them about, I believe, what they thought of Pathfinder. The gentleman answering the question said, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, however that saying goes. Took a very positive, spun what might have been taken as a negative and into a positive, put it that way.
I'm glad there's not a bitterness there. I always thought there was plenty of room for those two.
Yeah, I definitely didn't get the sense that there was any, and Wizards of the Coast, formerly TSR, seemed to be doing just fine.
That still breaks my heart.
That they're not TSR anymore?
Yes.
Also, they were talking about the Baldur's Gate 2 remake. I guess they already did that. They already did this for 1, and now they're doing it for 2, sort of a remix or a, you know, upgrade to newer graphics, rendering it in a new engine. Looks pretty cool. I don't know how much of a Baldur's Gate fan you were, but yeah, that's coming out. So much went on, by the way, that if I omit anything, and Nick ever wants to keep me honest, I invite that. Saturday, I was able to check out the one game that I've been lusting after for quite a long time. On the Xbox One, that being Titanfall, the first-person shooter involving jumping off walls and hopping into mechs. I actually had fun with that. Played I don't remember the exact class name, but somebody that had a little pistol that locked onto multiple targets, so I wasn't brawling gunner, I was more of a tactical, you know, sneaky person, which meant if I got into a face-to-face confrontation with a gunner, I'd get gunned down, but if I could sneak up, yeah. But if I could sneak up behind like 3 gunners, I could lock on all 3 of them and kill them at once. And once the gun got a lock, it was an instant kill. It was just a matter of waiting for it to get that lock. And that's to say nothing of the mech combat, which went. I don't remember what actually triggers the so-called Titanfall, which is when you earn your mech and it's dropped down from heaven for you to jump into. But I got that happened to me twice during my session. And man, the mech thing was really cool. It was a hell of a lot of fun. It was like the experience of driving like tanks or other vehicles in Battlefield, but like times 10 because it was a mech. Just really, really cool, man. Even dying in one of those is awesome because you get to eject and like you go through this eject sequence and see yourself like shoot up out of your mech. It's awesome, man. I know you're not a massive first-person shooter guy. I venture to say that this might draw you in. This was a great game, if you were to get an Xbox One, that is. Or, well, it's for PC, too, so.
Yeah, I'll pick that up for PC for sure.
Oh, sweet. Maybe I'll get it for PC as well, so we can play together. I don't know if there's Xbox One /PC crossplay or not. Also played some Sonic Lost World, an excellent game. The one thing that really stands out was the music. I was playing on a stage where I was sort of running down a track, so speed was just sort of built into the stage I was playing. It was reminiscent of the, I think for the Dreamcast version, weren't there some where you were sort of basically on a speed course and had to just like keep running, that sort of thing. It was really cool, but according to Nick, on some of the other, on the section he played, dashing wasn't like the default run mode. You had to hold down like the run button to go fast.
That sounds very strange for a Sonic game.
Yeah. I liked the game. It seemed like it borrowed very heavily from Mario Galaxy, or at least it seemed to be in that vein. Like you're running around like sort of cylinders and that sort of thing. I don't know. My overall impression was good. It's definitely different than what I'm used to for Sonic. But then again, what I'm used to for Sonic is like 20 years old and takes the form of Sonic 2. So let's see. Also, the Wind Waker HD remake, which is the Legend of Zelda Wind Waker game, now scaled into high definition. Really cool. It looks gorgeous. That was a game that was on the GameCube. I owned it, but really barely played it. And so I think I will get that for the Wii U and play it in glorious HD for the first time. Capcom had a very impressive booth setup for the Monster Hunter game that is on both the Wii U and the 3DS. I own that game. I had friends that swore they were going to play with me, and I have yet to play with anybody. So I dragged Nick into the booth, and we played together. But it was not completely selfish on my part. He met up with someone of whom he's a fan, a person who was working the booth, who is also a podcaster on, I believe, Laser Time. So Nick got to meet kind of one of his heroes. Actually, this was really cool. He got to meet a lot of the people he liked from listening to podcasts and stuff. It got me thinking, nobody came up to me and said, like, hey, you're Tom from Nerd Extravaganza. Yeah, we're gonna have to remedy that.
Next year, man. Next year.
Yeah, it's got to be, man. My ego is just getting crushed left and right. Yeah, Monster Hunter is pretty cool. Hopefully I can encourage the people to play that with me. They had this whole section of indies slash mobile games. I think they actually called it like the mega indie booth or mega indie section. I played a really cool Match 3 mobile device game, you know, to be used on your tablet or phone, what have you, called Little Legends. Nick and I played some verses on that, and it's pretty cool because, of course, as you're matching three, you know, you're like assaulting your enemy. These little weapons are appearing, and the guy's giving me tips like, as soon as a weapon, like as soon as you get a sword, hit that button, and then you like inflict massive damage. So you're doing your opponent wrong by, you know, obviously matching, and then you're just letting out these super attacks as soon as you get them by just tapping the bottom of the screen. Very intuitive and like a really fun game. I'm somebody, as a traditional gamer, that doesn't probably give tablet and phone gaming its due, this game got me thinking about it. I would actually pick it up if I knew my friends would play online with me, who may or may not be sitting here on the podcast with me.
I can't even play a 3DS, man.
Yeah, but this is like your phone. You know, you've got it with you anyway. So, you know, just bust it out and we'll play. No big deal. Okay, so that brought me to the next stop in sort of the little indie row. And I played a really, 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 really cool game called Dragon Fantasy Book 2. Very Super NES style. Like you were playing a Final Fantasy. Like, to the point where you got out to the overworld and I was like, whoa, Mode 7. And the lady who was helping me was like, yep, isn't that cool? Like, so it was great that actually somebody got what I was saying about the cool Mode 7 effects from Final Fantasy on the Super NES. And cool to play that game. It was really well done. You could tell the person, the individual, at least one of the individuals behind it, is a well-known person in the industry, and it shows in the game. The dialogue's really cool, the music's really good, and it's actually a game that if I owned a Vita, I would pick up and might consider just like picking up for whatever PlayStation console it comes out on, if that's possible. They said if you bought one, you got the license for the other. I don't know if it's only available via the Vita or what, but either way, worth looking up. Dragon Fantasy Book 2. Also on the portable side of things, for the 3DS, I know you're a big portable gamer, as you just said, I played Zelda Link Between Worlds, which is a sequel, I guess, to A Link to the Past.
Wow.
You know what? Don't correct me if I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. I want it to be a sequel, even if I'm wrong. Really cool looking game, actually. It played right, it felt right, looked right, made me want to play it on my 3DS system. So that got a good thumbs up. That might get you back into portable gaming, Brian. Oh, and also I played, speaking of Blast from the Past, I played the DuckTales remastered game. Have you seen that yet?
Like DuckTales? Like NES DuckTales?
Yeah, they took NES DuckTales and just completely redid the graphics to like cartoon level quality. And it's really, 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 really cool. So I believe that's cross-platform, and I don't remember on which platform I played it. I just walked up and like there was a controller there, and I picked it up and played because my mind was blown by how cool it looked. And now like it's like Scrooge McDuck's voice and everything too. Highly recommend you give that a shot. And I believe that rounds out Saturday, bringing me into Sunday, where I played the best looking first-person shooter, which was Killzone Shadowfall on the PlayStation 4.
Better than Titanfall, really.
Best looking, I said. I won't say it's the better shooter, because Titanfall was definitely my favorite shooter there, but Killzone looked better. And I will say that the PlayStation 4 seemed to have a bit of a graphical edge over the Xbox One, based on my totally subjective opinion. I think the PS4 looked a little bit better, a little sharper, graphics-wise. So that bodes well for those of you who decided to go PS4 exclusively. And if did you not pre-order the PS4, Brian?
I did pre-order a PS4.
Okay, then you're in for some quality graphics. If my point of view is, in fact, a fair look at the objective reality, then the PlayStation 4 should deliver superior graphics.
I'll repeat the question from earlier. Was it PS4s or was it hardware?
Yeah. Once again, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of actually what the display was. I think it was controllers like sticking out of a out of a column on a stand. So it could have just been a dev kit under there. You know, it could have been a console I didn't see. I guess my stock answer to that is because I wasn't paying close enough attention. There could have been mock-ups of the consoles right in front of me. There could have been active consoles right in front of me, or there could have been no consoles right in front of me.
Much help.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. But in the latter two cases, that would mean that there were builds running either on computers or dev machines or what have you. So are you kind of driving at the fact that maybe the mileage may vary between what I was seeing on these dev mock-ups and the actual production systems?
Well, I'm curious about that, and I'm also curious just what has been produced, because you hear so much in the news about, oh my gosh, there's a billion PlayStation 4s ready for launch date, and Xbox One hasn't even finished their architecture yet and all that kind of stuff. I was just curious what your experience with the finality of things was.
I can't make a definitive statement as to whether or not Sony has like real, you know, stuff running on like final production metal. You know what I mean? What's the saying? Running on iron, running on metal, whatever. I've also heard the rumors that Sony are much better, are much farther along when it comes to having their things ready to go. But as we now know, Microsoft has like an extra week before they launch, so that should make up for any gap in readiness, I would think, right? Let's see. I also played some Drive Club, also played Knack, which was a very cool, I want to say it mixed like an action kind of beat 'em up with Katamari Damacy, in that you sort of drew in elements and girded yourself, and like I was like hitting piles of wood, and the, you know, the planks would like form armor on my body, I guess it was.
Did it have the crazy music?
Oh no. It did from Katamari, no. But the game was cool. So I'll keep an eye on Knack, I think, also for the PS4. Let's see. I also played the remake of the Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion.
The NES game?
The Castle of Illusion was the Genesis game, I believe, originally. Do you remember that? The 16-bit Castle of Illusion?
The game I remember was for NES for sure. So, no, I may not remember this one.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse, the original Castle of Illusion was a Genesis game. So this was a remake of that. And in my notes, of course, I don't have for which system. I walk up, I see game, I pick up controller, I play. I was that captivated by some of these games that I just like walked up and completely forgot what I was playing them on.
You sound a little starstruck.
I am, man. This, like, this whole, when I say it was a blur, it's not just because I'm scatterbrained. Like, it was just so much sensory input and like so much cool stuff. That brings me to definitely back to the Wii U, where I played a game called Super Mario 3D World. I was of the mind that they are really saturating the market, Mario games. It seems like there are already like two on the, between the Mario and Luigi, there are already like two 2D games on the Wii U. You know, and now they're going to come out with this other sort of variation on the Mario theme. But I was kind of pleasantly surprised by this. I played it on a four-player team, all using Wiimotes. It was fun, and I think if you are playing multiplayer, this is a fun game. If you're playing single player, I'm not so sure. It borrowed some key elements from a ball game, Super Mario 2, if you remember that game, where like the characters weren't just like reskins. They actually had their own special abilities.
Mm-hmm.
I played Toad. I don't know what his ability was, but like Peach could fly.
I think Toad was strong in 2, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I don't remember if I was strong in this or not. I was on a level where we were like making our way through these different pipes, and you know, getting like flushed through plumbing to try to get to different objectives before finally making it to the flag at the end. So I don't know if it's a sort of what I want to call it, like an instancing sort of game where it's like, hey, here's your challenge, do it, or if it actually was a proper platformer, because I hadn't researched the game much before this. But the experience, the play experience, I can speak very highly of. It was fun. So Super Mario 3D World, also known as Super Mario in a Cat Suit. Rounding out Sunday, another first-person shooter, a staple shooter, and the one that made me get finally give the better-looking first-person shooter crown over to Killzone and the PlayStation 4 was Battlefield 4 for the Xbox One, or actually, this one I can confirm was a computer. And not the Xbox One, because the game crashed a few times while we were doing it. They were having, like, network problems.
Don't!
Yeah. I'm not going to blame... You know, I'm sure that's going to be in no way going to reflect on the final product. They had, like, a game server or something, and all these PCs hooked up to it, and it was going down here and there. And I definitely crashed to Windows a couple times. But once they got it running, it was running a little bit slowly, and I understand that's somewhat typical of these alpha builds like we were playing. So it's not the quick pace I'm used to in Battlefield. But once I got into the groove, man, it's definitely Battlefield, but much better looking and more and possibly more fun. So I give it a solid thumbs up, but did not rise to the graphical level of Killzone, I thought. And I believe it was on that day that I attended the Rev 3 or Revision 3 panel. If you may remember that as a an online outlet that Rick recommended during our cable cutting or our cord cutting episode. Yeah. Well, there was a panel there featuring none other than Adam Sessler.
Adam didn't run up and like, oh my God, it's Tom from Nerd Extravaganza.
Adam didn't do that. You know, he was, I'm really glad he, everywhere I go, the guy embarrasses me. I'm really glad that he sort of just kept his cool this time just because I was around, you know, there was no need to get all bent out of shape. At this point, I will just repeat, I can't say enough, there's too much to do at PAX. It's such a good con, there's too much to do. We could go there, Brian, and focus only on tabletop and role-playing and occupy the entire, like, convention time just going for that.
That sounds tempting.
Yeah. Of course, you'll be at Dragon Con instead, so we'll have to split our forces up.
Do they always overlap?
Yeah, PAX is always a dual... The whole purpose of it was to bring tabletop and video gaming together in one convention.
No, I mean Dragon Con and PAX.
I don't know. Hopefully not. But I know this year, even when I checked the calendar, I recognize that they did. So if they both are Labor Day weekend, then yes. But if they move, then perhaps not. There's always PAX East, though. Speaking of Labor Day, that brings me to Monday, when I did not labor, but instead spent more time playing games at PAX. On that day, the PlayStation 4 graphic superiority point was driven home when I attended the infamous Second Son demo, where he brought you into this little mini theater and showed you, like, you know, the movie trailer type thing that looked really cool. And then there was a fellow who actually was playing, I believe, on a dev box again. So we didn't get our hands on it, but we actually got to watch him play through it. That game looks absolutely gorgeous. I have not really experienced the Infamous series. It's something I've always meant to check out, and now I kind of want to go get Infamous 1 and 2 so that I'm ready for this game. And so then stepping away from the graphical powerhouse that was Infamous, I made my way over to the Vita area and played a game called Tearaway. I played it, and there was a big queue of people behind me. I don't know if you've heard of this game at all.
I have not.
I was basically running around a little bit confused, and like creatures were asking me to take their photo, and I obliged. But I realized I was probably being inconsiderate to the people behind me. Like, there was nobody in line, but then when I walked up, suddenly there was a big line of people behind me.
You started a trend.
Yeah, I did. And so I had to tear myself away from Tearaway. God, I'm not funny. And step over to the PlayStation 3, and this I can confirm was PlayStation 3 stand, where I played a very cool PSN game, I believe PSN downloadable game called Rain, where you are controlling, I believe, the spirit of a boy. He's making his way through these dark streets, being stalked by these like weird skeletal dog creatures and stuff. Really cool sort of mechanic to it. You can only see the kid when he's being rained on, right? Because that's the only thing that makes his like spirit like visible. Well, the same goes for your enemies. Only when there's rain dropping on them can you see them. To hide from your enemies, you go to a dry place and you turn invisible. Well, that also works against you, because when they're in a dry place, they too are invisible. Interesting game, Rain. And the final game that I played was called Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze for the Wii U. And that game looked really awesome. Did you ever play Donkey Kong Country?
I hated Donkey Kong.
Well, then you probably won't be a fan of the Tropical Freeze game, because it's like the same principle, basically. It looks way better, of course, even though the Super NES game for its time looked really good. And they even brought back the same musical composer. I was a fan of the music in the original Donkey Kong Country, so I wasn't able to hear it at the display unit I was playing, but hopefully that bodes well for the music in this game. Sorry to hear you weren't a fan, but I may subject you to that game if and when I get it. probably more of a when than an if.
I don't remember what I didn't like about it, honestly. Just remember not really caring for it as much as everyone else in the world did.
Yeah, it was kind of a hit. To round out Monday on the main floor, the final thing I did was check out the Oculus Rift. Are you familiar with that?
It's the visor, right?
Yes, it is a virtual reality visor. It is the 1990s made flesh, let's say. Or the promise of the 1990s made... That's not really flesh. Whatever. We finally got our VR goggles. This thing was cool, man. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to get, like, some kind of an eye disease from it. Because, like, by the time I got it, like, first of all, I put this thing on, and, like, my eyelashes are touching lenses or something. So I'm like, oh God, that's... I'm going to get, like, what, conjunctivitis or whatever? Like, this... Ugh.
And then the guy's only like the 9,000th person to do that day, so
right. It's like toward the end of the day, on the last day of PAX, right? And then the guy like tells me, he's like, "How you doing? Is it kind of blurry in there? You know, does it look blurry?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's a little bit blurry." He's like, "Well, you know, these things have been kind of beat up." So basically, it was the end of PAX for him too. But they sat me down. There were two things you could play. You could either play, I think, a game called Hawk or Hawks. Or you could sit down for this race car driving demo. So that's the one I did. So there was no play involved, but I sat there and I'm going around this race course. And as I'm looking around, like it's totally keeping up with me. Like I'm not getting like weird lag, motion sickness or anything. Like it's totally like high fidelity. Like as fast as I could whip my head around, this thing kept up with me. And I mean, I'm looking back behind me. I'm seeing cars come up behind me. It was really, really cool. So all the hype I've heard about the Oculus Rift is definitely not without merit, because pretty cool technology. I hope it translates as well to games as I think it can, because we might be one step closer to the Ready Player One future we all kind of sort of want, I think, minus the like global shortages of resources and only way to make it big is to win the lottery. That's it. That concluded my time on the play floor. I then went to attend my last panel of the con, the name of which does not elude me because this one I was looking forward to because somebody I know was on it. It was called Dark Secrets of Gaming. And it was sort of people who are in the industry talking about sort of the travails that people in the industry must suffer. And Kim, a friend of mine who I mentioned in the past as being a member of the Project Spark team, actually gave a speech on imposter syndrome, which is the syndrome, I guess, wherein you think, hey, I don't belong here. Like, am I really doing this? Do I really deserve to have this job? Do I really deserve to be in this role? Do I really have the qualifications to be on this development team? There are brighter people than me out there that haven't gotten this chance, blah, 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 et cetera. You know, I think a lot of like bright people, talented people, sell themselves short or hold themselves back by just constantly thinking that they're not good enough or they don't have the bona fides or the right to succeed, you know what I mean? Or to be in a position of success. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's interesting that they, as an industry, tackle that. I didn't know it was so localized.
Well, you know, I think it translates to almost anything. Like, I sit here in doing this world-beating podcast and think to myself, why me? I mean, this could be anybody, but... Here I am. Here I sit. All joking aside, I had imposter syndrome the whole time I was at PAX. I just kept pinching myself. I can't believe I'm here. Why am I here and not someone else? Do I really deserve to be here? Why do I have these scalp tickets and not those poor people out on the street begging to get in?
Well, in your defense, there were a lot of other people there.
That's true. A lot of people did make it in. Yeah, I guess you shouldn't feel bad at all. I was no imposter. I was a legitimate PAX attendee, and I think that legitimately rounds out my PAX roundup. Some length, I think, to it, but I think I was pretty concise in my description. What's your overall impression of my roundup, sir?
I'm a little jealous, man. I would have liked to have been there. I think I lied to myself all this time, like, oh, PAX should be cool, but it's not really all that neat, you know, it's just another convention. And probably because of your involvement, this year I paid a lot of attention. I looked at a lot of the pictures from the floor and all that kind of stuff, and it looked like a really good time. It definitely looked like a step up.
Yeah, it's like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we attend a lot of cons, and we look through the schedule to find things that we want to see, panels we want to see, booths we want to go to, artists we want who we want to visit, at sort of maybe scattershot cons of the type we're used to attending. But at a con that specializes in all the crap we like, not things that are sort of on the periphery of what we like, but things that are our core likes, video games, tabletop games, etc. You couldn't ask for a con better tailored to guys like us, man. I will make a money-back guarantee that you will feel the same way if you ever attend PAX.
I may take you up on that. It sounds like I'd like to.
to remind you, there is, in addition to the regular PAX Prime, which I attended, there's also PAX East, which is, I won't say in our neck of the woods, but at least on the same coast. So if that's something you want to look at attending, I'm definitely down.
It might also be a balance of PAX East and Dragon Con is better than PAX Prime.
Perhaps, perhaps. We'll have to take this up in our Nerd Extravaganza War Room as we plot the next year's itinerary. But before we get to planning next year's itinerary, I've got one more cool little roundup. I'm sort of doing the second half of my Geekly Weekly with this final Geekly Weekly roundup set of items. Post-PAX. While Nick and I were standing in line, we found ourselves standing behind this couple who we struck up a conversation with, this husband and wife who were there, and they recommended to me a video game store in the town of Edmonds, which is a bit north of where I'm at right now, called Another Castle. Nick was in town one other day past PAX, so we were looking for some things to do. So we decided to go check this place out. Well, we get there, and it's awesome. It's a video game store, new and used. They've got a heck of a selection, and they've got, like, a full-on, like, nice, respectable little arcade in there. So we played some games and checked the place out, talked to the people. If you recall, some years back, we attended a gaming con, a rare gaming, video gaming-related con in South Florida. I had snaked out from under me a Super Famicom game that I had been lusting after for some years called Bahamut Lagoon.
Yeah, I kind of recall.
Well, bummed as I was about that, through PAX, I was redeemed. Because at this place, I saw these Super NES cartridges, you know, domestic Super NES cartridges, with titles that I know never came out in the United States. Dragon Quest games that never came out here. Treasure Hunter G, Live Alive, or Live Alive, however you pronounce that. And Bahamut Lagoon, with an American-style sticker on it and everything. So I ask folks behind the counter, and they tell me, we manufacture these, like, straight up. We go and find, like, the best quality ROMs out there. Like, we go through them and make sure the translation's good, so that they vet them to make sure they're good. Then they actually, I guess, take, like, the best-shaped Nintendo cartridge they can. They fabricate their own sticker for it, and they burn that ROM to the cart. So they basically fabricate for you the cart that you never got a local version of. So
that's
now I am...
very cool.
So I am now in possession of a Bahamut Lagoon domestic Super NES port. You couldn't have asked for a more fitting end to PAX, except that we then proceeded north from there to have a final celebration dinner at none other than the AFK Tavern in nearby Everett. So rounded things out by getting a game that I always wished for, but that never existed until now, based on a recommendation I got from someone at PAX, finished things off at AFK. A fitting end to an unexpectedly awesome long weekend at PAX.
Sounds like a good weekend.
Yeah, honestly, the best way I've spent it in a long time. So can't say enough about PAX, and can't recommend a better way to spend a long weekend than at PAX. Please don't be in a rush to buy tickets next year, people, because I want to be able to get mine, and I don't want to have to buy them off a scalper. But after I get mine, I encourage you all listeners to attend PAX. It's really, I said this is for the fifth time, I'll say it's the best con I've ever attended.
Maybe the tickets will last 5 minutes this next year instead of, what was it, like 93 seconds this year?
Yes, yes, yes. They went fast, and I was very discouraged to see some people walking around with stacks of passes, you know. So whatever measures they had in there to prevent scalpers from buying in bulk, they were able to thwart somehow. So, or circumvent somehow, I should say. So.
Lame.
Yeah, yeah, a little lame. I don't blame the PAX people for it, though. You know, what can you do? I guess that rounds things out for this episode. I will... begin concluding things by saying that you don't need a pass to listen to the Nerd Extravaganza podcast. It's totally free. We will never charge you. At least I don't think we'll ever charge you. Are we ever going to charge for this thing?
Yeah, pretty likely.
Oh, well, then you better become a founding member. And the way you do that is by subscribing to us on iTunes and rating us favorably and writing us a review and or listening to us via Stitcher if streaming is more your speed. And since Rick's not here, I'll also mention that you should check out our website at www.nerdstravaganza.com and feel free to drop us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. And I will sweeten the pot by saying that if you interact with us either via the email or one of the social media avenues Brian's about to mention, there might be a little PAX swag coming your way.
Yes, the social media, you can join us on Facebook. We have our page that you can like, and we have our group that you can join. if you want to be best buddies with the crew. And as soon as we get our nerd war room situation banged out, you can learn all about where we'll be next year and possibly join us if you'd like.
Yeah, we encourage that. And you can play Bahamut Lagoon with me. I want to say this, too. Check us out on Twitter. I've taken it upon myself to interact with you folks on Twitter. We are just, what, Nerdstravaganza. So at Nerdstravaganza, interact with us. Might still be some swag coming your way. With that, I think the only thing to do is take it out with a word that is actually synonymous with PAX. Brian, I will let you stand in for Rick by saying...
Peace?
Peace it is. Bye. Let's see. Let me think. Actually, I'm trying to think if I know what the Revision 3 panel was about. But I'm drawing a blank as to what that panel might have been about now. It's Adam Sessler, and he was talking about stuff. Okay, sounds good.